Hey, welcome back to Coaching Through the Bible. Yes, I'm a little late this week. I apologize up front. It'll never happen again. This week's focus, Purim, on why and purpose. This week, I want to take a slight diversion from the weekly reading from the Torah, from the Bible, and focus on the holiday of Purim and the book of Esther in particular, and particularly Esther herself in that book. I think about Esther and Mordechai a lot. I think a lot about all they went through. I think a lot about what they did and what they accomplished. And I think a lot about how they did it. It happens that for us here in this house, the book of Esther is probably our favorite book in the Bible. I know that sounds like something weird to say out loud, or that it's weird to maybe have that kind of a thing, but it's really true. And really one of our favorite moments in all of the Bible is the back and forth between Mordechai and Esther in the fourth chapter of the book itself. And that's really going to be our focus, and relate that to concept of finding our why. Finding our why is a big and popular subject to talk about. There are multiple books and talks on that subject, finding our why. Simon Sinek, who's very well known and very much attached and connected to, obsessed, even devoted to the idea of helping people find their why. And it's really the focus here today. Finding our why. The importance of having a purpose or a why in our work, in our lives, as a driver for our accomplishment and our happiness and our success. Let's begin with Esther. Esther is selected to be the queen of the entire kingdom, and it would seem that that's an incredible purpose in life. She comes from nothing. She has no parents. She lives with a relative. She is at the bottom of the barrel of all the people that one could select to be the queen. And one could assume, rightfully so, that in being selected as the queen from that group, that already is an incredible purpose in life. John Maxwell, in a book that we mentioned a number of times, Running with the Giants, has a beautiful chapter on Esther. And the idea that God has a place for you, sort of the spiritual side to some degree of Esther's journey. But even if we don't think about it from a spiritual perspective, simply just an accomplishment perspective and a success, so Esther is an ultimate success story, rising from nothing, as we just described, and becoming the queen of 127 nations. But what's interesting to note, and sort of it's lost in our study of the story in the book of Esther, is timing. Esther is selected in the 7th year of the king, Ahasuerus of Xerxes, his 7th year of being the king. She is selected. And then nothing. So she's just the queen. She's doing her duties, she's fulfilling her responsibilities as the queen of 127 nations. We have no window into what exactly that means, into what exactly is that she is doing, but she's the queen. And for 5 years, that's what she does. We don't know what. It's only in the 12th year when things change, and not because of her own doing, but because Haman, the evil person in the book, the villain, starts to antagonize and decided that it's time to destroy the people of Israel and the kingdom, all of the Jews of the land. It's only at that point do things change, that there is actually then clearly a why for her existence, not one that she knows or one that she immediately agrees to. And that's the perspective I want to share with you today in understanding the back and forth, the conversation through messengers of Mordechai and Esther there in the 4th chapter. He informs her about what's about to happen. The impending doom of all of her people, all of his people, all of the Jewish people in the entire kingdom. And he wants her to act And immediately she's not convinced. She offers up an explanation or an excuse as to why she can't. One reads the commentaries very carefully, one will see that there are multiple meanings to her unwillingness or ambivalence to participate in this endeavor, whether that's a question of timing because the decree is 11 months away, or whether it's simply out of fear, as she states in the verse itself, that she hasn't been called to the king in 30 days, and anyone who goes to the king without being called can be subject to death. Those are legitimate arguments to be made. Mordechai is steadfast in his belief that she has to do something. And what's super interesting to me this year particularly, and again, as I said at the beginning, it's something I think about a lot, it's a moment I think about a lot, is the manner in which Mordechai puts it to Esther as to her responsibility specifically in this moment, and to when it's clear now that her why and her purpose show up. Mordechai says to please tell Esther the following: "Do not believe for one second that you will survive this more than any of the other people." It's if you believe that because you're the queen, you'll be able to hide out in the palace, or that you'll be able to keep it secret further and for longer, that you are not among the people of Israel who are going to be destroyed, that is a mistake. That is not true. That is far from the truth. The reality of it is, he says to her in verse 14, that if you are silent at this moment, listen to the way he describes it, the salvation of the people will come from somewhere else, and you and your house will be lost. And who knows that if but for a moment like this, you reach the kingdom. It's an incredibly powerful moment in all of the Bible. Can't think of another moment that equals sort of the level of pressure, stress, anxiety, tension, suspense, excitement, power of that line, and then her response. But let's take a look at that. Because what Mordecai says to Esther here specifically is, yes, the Jewish people, the people of Israel, need to be saved, but the way and the manner in which he says it to her is about very much her own purpose and her own why. Because he says that if you don't do it, it's not that it's not going to happen. It's going to happen through some other means. Meaning, this is going to happen. Our people are going to be saved. Mordechai is the ultimate believer. He has all the faith in the world that this is going to happen. It's just a question of whether or not Esther will appreciate her moment here and take action in the moment. So as much as this is about the people being saved, and it's about them ultimately being saved anyway, Mordechai is specifically speaking to her in her role in this moment, and whether or not she's going to capture and seize it or miss it. And if she misses it, then she's lost for history. It's not simply that she'll be remembered another manner. She won't be remembered at all. She'll be gone from history. The people will live on, but Esther will be completely forgotten. And maybe then it's for this moment. This is the purpose of your being the queen. There is no other purpose for you to be the queen than this purpose, from this moment. This is your why in this moment. And then she reacts. It's an amazing thing to sort of look at. It's not simply that she thinks about it and she contemplates it and she takes her time to consider what she's going to do. Immediately she changes and everything happens and sort of snowballs from that moment. She knows exactly what to do, exactly what to say. Even if she's nervous and scared and afraid and worried and all those other things, she jumps into action, she directs Mordecai, and they go and they do it. And then we know the rest is history. In that moment, her why is clarified, the what and the how become obvious, and she goes and she saves the people. And so purpose and why are tremendous motivators and what I would call definers of success and failure. Simon Sinek, in his book Start With Why, in his other book Find Your Why, and in his many talks on the subject, talks about the concept of the golden circle of the what you would describe as the why, how, and what of anything, and that most people or most organizations and most companies know exactly what they do. Some of them know how they do it. Very few of them can articulate well why it is that they do what they do. And so the what and the how is clear, or more clear, and then the why is very fuzzy. And so the purpose, or the why, is muddled, and it becomes hard to differentiate and to show difference. And what he says is that when we operate from the out in, from the what to the how to the why, it doesn't work. When we work from the inside out, and we start with why, that's sort of the mantra of his being right now. When we start with why on the inside, and then the how and the what emanate from the why, everything is different. The entirety of the being is different. Same thing with Esther. When it emanates from her why, when she's clear on the why, then the how and the what become ultimately clear and obvious, and something that she's going to do. And so it's important for us, vital for us as individuals, members of a family, whether it's for ourselves or for other people around us, to help people figure out their why. Why do they do what they do? Not so much how they do it or what they do, but why? Why do they do it? What is the driver? What is the singular passion point in it? We talked early on about passion when we talked about Abraham believing passionately. We're moving away slightly from believing passionately, but really deducing and understanding and clarifying, crystallizing what we'll call the rock, that one item on which you stand as to why you do what it is that you do. And so to figure out what that is, in the book Start With Why, in the other book, Finding Your Why, Find Your Why, it requires upon us to sort of take a, what I would call a process. There's a process. It's not a simple process. It's an important process, which sort of has multiple steps. Step number one is to look into the past. Really sort of take an analysis or a review of your own experiences, the things in life that you've done, that you've accomplished that gave you joy. And really try to begin to see the patterns in the things that really give you joy and pleasure and fulfillment in your past work or hobbies or anything like that. That's first. So look into the past. And two, even if the past is clear, and sometimes when it's not clear, seeking outside perspective, getting another set of eyes on that set of experiences and patterns will really help to clarify and to crystallize the why. Esther couldn't see it on her own. She needed a Mordechai to come along and really clarify the why in her system. So really get the outsider's perspective, someone who's going to ask all those really important questions, someone like a coach. I'm a little biased on that one, but someone like a coach is going to help ask all the questions that you don't want to ask, to hear the things that you don't want to hear, to do the things that you might not want to do. And then it helps you really uncover the motivations and really tease out all the patterns. So the first thing is to look into the past. The second thing is to get the outsider's perspective. And then maybe the third thing is to look at the hows, sort of how you do things, and you know, in the manner and how you do them may help clarify the why as well. That's a really important one. The last thing is really experience. Really go try and test and experiment to sort of see why, you know, the things that you like to do, the things that you don't like to do, and to sort of move away from them. And those can really help you figure out the why. Sitting and thinking about it is part of it, but it's certainly not enough. You can't sit and think for the sake of experience, and you can't use sitting and thinking to replace the experience itself as well. So in developing and working towards your own individual why, it's sort of going through this process. And I saw somewhere else really, really nice approach. There's a blogger online named Evan Carmichael. Just sort of fell upon him, and he has what he calls a purpose planner. And I think it's really important to have this sort of an idea. I took a course on this subject as well while I was studying executive coaching in the summer on authentic leadership, really understanding what authentic leadership is and what is your version of authentic leadership, really crystallizing and clarifying the language for your leadership and what resonates with you as a leader, really getting down to one or two words. Carmichael describes it as the who. Your who is a one-word rock. It's this one item that you stand on that no one can shift you off of, that is at the core and the foundation of you, who you are as a being. So you go from your who, from what you stand for to the why. So he puts the why sort of second, which is interesting. The why, sort of, you know, where does the why come from? So we talked about experience. He talks about it as sort of learning from your pain, from your painful experiences, and then moving into your how. And so there are a lot of ways to develop one's own why, but it's really important that for the purpose, for our own sort of satisfaction and sense of accomplishment and sense of real purpose in life, is really crystallizing and clarifying that why. And when we have that, so then everything sort of becomes much, much easier. The obstacles in our lives, the things that get in our way, the things that stop us and keep us from accomplishing and fulfilling our destinies or our purpose in the world, sort of fade away. We figure out the path because we've established the why. And once the why is clear, the path, however we sort of wind our way to it, becomes all the more clear as well. So that's coaching through the Bible. For this week, for this past week. Again, simple apology for being late with it. No excuse. It'll never happen again. Have a great week. Speak to you soon.